Welcome to the Personal Financial Planning Section podcast, delivering insights from experts on tax, retirement, estate, risk management, investment planning, and practice management, designed to help you best serve your clients and take your practice to the next level. I'm your PFP Section host, Sarah Bradley. Be sure to visit us at aicpa.org/PFP and stay tuned at the end of the episode for information on how to access valuable resources. And now over to our guest.
Thank you, Sarah. This is Bob Keebler, and today we're here to talk about Notice 2019-07, a new aggregation procedure for purposes of 199 Cap A. Let's jump right in. Notice 2019-07 addresses a very important issue. That is, when does real estate qualify as a trade or business? So, individually held real estate can use this notice along with relevant pass-through entities can also use the safe harbor. Failure to meet the safe harbor doesn't preclude an enterprise from otherwise qualifying as a trade or business, but it makes it very simple. And that's the thing. We won't have to debate with a revenue agent whether or not we're in a qualified trade or business if we can meet the rules of this safe harbor. So what this notice does is provide a safe harbor of when you're going to be a trade or business. Now, this solely applies to real estate and just for purposes of 199 Cap A. So basically, what they're doing is describing a rental real estate enterprise. And in a rental real estate enterprise, what you have is an interest in real property held for the production of rents. This can consist of multiple properties. An individual or a relevant pass-through entity must hold the interest directly or through a disregarded entity. Taxpayers must either treat each property as a separate enterprise or treat all similar properties as separate enterprises. Importantly, commercial and residential property can't be part of the same enterprise. And you're not allowed to change this aggregation election from year to year unless there is a significant change in circumstances. So what you really have now, there are two aggregation elections we need to pay attention to. The first aggregation election is the one we've been working with for almost a year. So that's out there, and we know a little bit about that one, of how you would aggregate trades or businesses or real estate ventures. This is different. This gets you to a point where by consolidating or aggregating 10 different rental properties, you can reach the level of a trade or business. Let's just say hypothetically that you held 5 rental properties. None of these properties in and of themselves rise to the level of a trade or business. But by making the aggregation election, drawing a circle around all 5 and treating them as one, what you're going to be able to do is meet the trade or business requirement. And we'll talk about how that's done. Now, real estate used as a residence by the taxpayer is not eligible for this election, nor is real estate rented or leased under a triple net lease. What they're basically saying is, perhaps for this rule, but maybe much broader, a triple net lease is not a trade or business. This is a long-time view of the IRS. Now, what is a triple net lease? Just to refresh our memories, a triple net lease is the person renting the property pays all the property taxes, they pay for all the repairs, and they pay for all the maintenance. Now, if you're missing one of those attributes, I would think you would take the position you can still aggregate under this notice. For example, we have a client, very large client, but a ton of real estate, most of it on double net leases. Our client is came out of one of the trades. He's very good at fixing things, and he has people that work with him on fixing things. So he takes care of all the maintenance, and that's just part of what the tenant pays in their gross rent. The risk of a roof needing to be repaired or a driveway needing to be repaired or big improvements like that fall on the landlord, not on the tenant. And I'm certainly thinking right now that he'd be in a position to take advantage of this notice. Now, to qualify for these safe harbor requirements, There are a number of requirements. So first of all, separate books and records are to be maintained to reflect income and expenses for each rental real estate enterprise. For taxable years beginning before 2023, you have to have 250 or more hours of rental services that are performed with respect to rental real estate. And for taxable years beginning after 2022, 250 or more hours of rental services in any three of the five consecutive taxable years that end with the taxable year, or 250 hours or more in each year for an enterprise held for less than 5 years. Now, the taxpayer also has to maintain contemporaneous records, time logs, or similar documents regarding the following: the hours of all services performed, a description of all services performed, dates on which services are performed, and who performed the services. This is clearly a very onerous requirement. Look at how poorly we do with mileage logs. People have struggled with that for years. And now you're asking them to keep, basically you're asking people to do timesheets and people to keep track of their travel time versus their improvement time working on a building. The dates in which all this happened, I think it's going to be a very difficult thing. Undoubtedly, they have apps for the mileage. No doubt, very quickly, somebody will come out with an app for this. You can put it on your smartphone and it will help you with this. Now, the thing is, you're only allowed to count rental services for purposes of the 250-hour requirement. This is specific in the notice. Rental services are different. Now, rental services are what you would expect a property manager to do compared to tax and financial services where you're analyzing things. Here you go with rental services: advertising, negotiating and executing leases, verifying information contained in prospective tenant applications, collection of rent, daily operation and maintenance of property, repairs of property, purchase of materials, supervision of employees and independent contractors, rental services. Now, this is important. Rental services can be performed by employees, agents, and or independent contractors of the owners. Now, rental services do not include financial or investment management activities, procuring property, studying or reviewing financial statements, managing or constructing long-term capital improvements, and the time spent traveling to and from real estate. Now, this is interesting. If I spend my day, let's say I leave my house at 7 in the morning and I have 5 buildings, but it's 20 minutes between buildings. I go to building A, I go to building B, you get the drift, and I'm going to hit all the buildings in one day. That travel time isn't going to count even though it's consecutive between buildings. Now, well, this seems to me to be something that should be changed. I saw a furnace repair truck this morning. They get paid for driving between jobs. Now, it might be built into their price, but they get paid. And I don't know how you can say that you can't count the travel time, but that's what they said. Now, what happens procedurally is the taxpayer must include a statement on the return under penalties of perjury that the requirements for the safe harbor have been satisfied. So this is a very interesting thing, and I think it's going to help a lot of people by being able to, if you will, aggregate at the trade or business level. Now, this doesn't interfere at all with your normal aggregation. Just because you decide it's a trade or business, if then you want to aggregate that trade or business with another trade or business, that's a separate election. So let's say you did this aggregation and then you still wanted to aggregate the commercial and the residential rentals you had. You could still aggregate those under the final regulation. So you're actually going to have one aggregation set of tests that we just talked about for purposes of whether you even rise to the level of a trade or business. So that's the first door you have to knock on and get through. And then later you can aggregate pursuant to the regulations. That's a more operational aggregation where you meld your financial statements together. We have certainly covered a lot of ground today. On behalf of the PFP section of the AICPA, this has been Bob Keebler. If you enjoyed this podcast, we highly encourage you to visit the PFP section website and access the Impact of Tax Reform Planning Toolkit. Stay tuned for Sarah Bradley, who will tell you how to find these valuable resources. Thank you for listening today.
And thank you for sharing with our community of listeners. Want more information, resources, tools, and guidance on technical and practice management topics? Visit AICPA.org/PFP and check out the show notes for this episode as well. So if you're not already a member, think about joining the PFP section, which is designed to save you time, help you best serve your clients, and take your financial planning practice to the next level. You'll gain access to a robust selection of high-quality technical and practice management resources like guides, 24/7 access to an online learning library, client communication and education tools, up to 8 hours of free CPE, and more. Don't forget to leave us a review so we can continue bringing valuable and relevant content. And subscribe to our podcast channel so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to next time.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.